Here we are, folks, live and local at the Little Wolf Ironworks, I guess, forging center.
Forge shop.
Mic up to the mouth when we talk.
Forge shop. Anything you want to call it.
Cody Adolphson is our special guest here. He is the champion, the 2022 champion for History Channel's Forged in Fire. Now, the way I've been describing it to people, and you're going to describe it next, so get ready for your description of what Forged in Fire is. I say it's kind of like Survivor meets American Idol, but with swords and knives and daggers and really cool stuff.
Kinda. I like the fact that you need a skill on the show in order to compete.
Well, like Chopped, you know, yeah, where you got to actually have a little bit of a skill and a craft and a trade.
Yeah, exactly. It's a time competition between four bladesmiths to build what they want you to build and see if you have what it takes. And my episode was season 9, episode 6, so I'm just that episode's champion.
Oh, that episode's champion.
Okay, right, there's so multiple champions.
Oh, it is like Chopped then.
Yep.
Okay, every episode is a different champion.
Yep.
Okay, and you got some prize money?
Yeah, I got $10,000.
Nice, okay. Yeah. So that's, and the idea is either to go take a vacation or invest it in your business, right?
Right, yep.
Okay.
Something like that.
So let's talk about just the whole craft and the trade and the skill of foraging, welding, working with fire. Let's talk with foraging. Is this blacksmith? Is this what this is?
Yeah, it's blacksmithing, bladesmithing. Okay. It's the same thing they used to do when they used to forge weapons for, you know, throughout time.
Okay, so bladesmithing, blacksmithing. Is there any other type of words that we might know about? Fire starter, fire smithing?
No, it's okay. Mostly just bladesmithing, right. Blacksmithing.
So walk me through the process here about how a knife is made, because what I'm looking at here right now, folks, and we'll have the pictures available at thecrudelife.com as well as supertalk1270am.com or links to that. It starts out actually in an artist's sketchbook with a pencil, and it looks like somebody would be drawing a painting or a portrait of a person, you know, a sketch artist. But this is of a knife. Walk me through how this starts.
So I see knives, social media, anywhere in life, at Shields or anywhere. Get an idea for my own shape and I draw it up. But I'm really into Damascus, so the way a blade really starts with me is I actually forge out layered steel, which is Damascus steel.
No, it's, I'm not familiar with the word Damascus. Go on with
that.
So
Damascus is two types of different layered steel where, when you forge it out, depending on how you manipulate the metal and how many layers you have of the steel, the pattern changes in the steel.
What would be the other word besides Damascus that's used? Steel?
Layered steel.
Layered steel.
Pattern steel.
Okay. Pattern steel.
But it's mostly Damascus steel. And so then after you make your knife and you clean it up and you dip it into a acid etch, then your actual pattern shows after that forging process.
I see. Now I'm understanding what you're talking about. So that's where the artistic part really takes a new level.
Right. You can do pretty much anything with steel. I mean, there's people that put pictures in steel. I mean, it's crazy. That's,
how does that happen?
So there's a whole nother process of putting
in. Is it laser?
Nope. So what they do is they take nickel and then they shape it into what picture they want. And they put it into a canister. Damascus canister, and people that have seen the show will understand what I'm saying. And they actually put that into the steel, and then they'll tile it and forge weld it back together again, and it'll actually repeat down the blade.
So I can take my family picture.
Well, to an extent.
Okay.
It's a two-dimensional silhouetted shape.
I see.
Type
okay.
of deal. You can do basic pictures of it. It's crazy. People have put their names in steel. It's endless. The possibilities are absolutely endless with steel.
Does that take a lot of time then compared to just a traditional knife?
Yeah, I mean, you can forge out a traditional knife, get it forged to shape in a couple hours and heat treat it and temper it. I mean, you can get it done in a few hours, obviously. It
takes longer than that with the
with the Damascus. There are some steels that I've made that I've had 12 hours of forging alone into the steel before I even make the knife.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's a time-consuming. Patience is a big part of this.
I don't see an anvil around here. Oh, there it is. Okay. Woo!
I have
You have three anvils? Okay.
Four. That one's holding up a box.
I thought that was the box holder. Okay, no, that's another anvil.
That's a 100-year-old anvil.
Do you get a bang on the iron, or do you have one of these machines that does most of that? Or
I just bought a Big Blue with my prize money.
Big Blue.
It's a power hammer. It's a 110-pound power hammer.
Okay.
Air actuated.
And how does that work then? The Blue Max 110.
So it's powered by air, and it brings up your hammer, and then it hits a sensor and it drops it.
That would be pneumatic. The Magnaforce air compressor over there?
Yeah, ran by the air compressor. And then I have a press, which is electric, and that's hydraulic controlled.
Okay.
So, and then, I swing the hammer just as much as using these machines sometimes.
So what is the other one's called the Coal Iron Works. Is that the name of the machine?
Yep, that's my forging press. It's a 16-ton forging press.
And that just looks like what? It forges the layers together? Is
that
what it does?
Squishes it.
Squishes it.
Yep, okay. 16 tons has squishing power on it, and then the other one just hammers it out. Speeds up my drawing out process.
I bet I could fit my arm in there.
Oh, yeah. With that set of dies, that's my set of flat dies for after a heat treat or straightening out a billet. So depending on what dies I have in my machine is what it does to the steel.
Okay. Boy, this is some interesting things. Now, we're taking a look at the fire portion here. Now, how hot does this fire get? Does this flame get in the oven?
It's up to 3,000 degrees.
3,000 degrees?
Yep.
You ever cook in there? Have you ever put a hot dog in there just to see what happens?
I've turned off the forge for about 20 minutes and flash cooked a hot dog.
Are you for real?
Yeah.
Okay, s'mores? No?
No, s'mores.
Just melt that thing right off.
It's crazy how hot it gets in there. The steel gets so hot you can barely look at it.
Okay. How did you get into the show, by the way?
So, growing up in North Dakota, I've been around hunting. I always carried a knife. I always wanted to get into making knives, and then I'm a welder by trade, so been around metal my whole life. And so I saw the show come on, and I started getting into it more and more and more, and I finally made the decision in January of 2020 to pursue it and actually learn how to make knives. So I got a hold of one of my best friends, who I followed him on Instagram, and he's actually a 2-time Forge and Fire champion. And went and took a class with him out in Wisconsin, and then I just fell in love. I made my first Damascus knife, and I was hooked.
2-time forging champion?
Yeah, he's 2-time Forge and Fire champion.
Okay, and then you guys became buddies, and now does he treat you different now that you're a champ?
No, we treat each other pretty much the same.
What did he make for his championship?
So he was on the Battle of the Branches episodes. So he was Army. So he went up against 4 Army guys, other Smiths, and then he had to beat those other 3 guys and then move on against a guy from another one of the branches. So he made an Army Cavalry Saber, I believe, and then George Washington's Cateau Saber for his...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What did you make?
I made a Chincodea sword.
No, I don't know what that is.
So a Chincodea sword is a Italian Renaissance era sword that noblemen carried, and it's a really wide blade at the base. So Chincodea actually means 5-finger blade. The base of the blade is the width of your 5 fingers.
Okay.
So then it's a big, heavy blade, but it has fullers in it, which is ground in notches that run down the blade to lighten up your blade so it's wieldable. And I had to put 12 fullers into my sword.
Okay, and do they pick that? Do you pick that?
They pick that.
They pick that. Now, did you know what it was?
No. So the funny part about it, when I was being casted for the show, I was talking to the producers, and they kept saying, "We want you for this episode. We want you for this episode." And I'm like, "This is weird. Okay, whatever. Sure." So they make you a backup for the previous episode before you, just in case someone gets sick or something comes up. Then you'd have
so
to
you're
that
an understudy episode. Before your main event. That's interesting. Okay.
So I end up going out there, and more backstory behind this is, after I make it through my first and second round and they reveal this sword, I realize why they wanted me for this episode. So Tyler, my mentor, he went on against Ben Abbott, one of the judges. He was on Beat the Judges. So he was on the show 3 times.
Okay.
And he had to make a Chincodea against Ben Abbott. So it all kind of clicked, right, as they revealed the sword. It was kind of like, you guys had this planned.
I see.
To an extent, if I made it to that point, they had it planned. if I could make it.
You planned storylines that I wouldn't put it past anybody in the media.
It was wild. Yeah.
So did you make any other swords, daggers, or knives, or is just the one?
Just the one for the show, for the finale. But, I mean, my first and second round, I had to make those two canister Damascus blades, two matching blades in 3 hours.
Two matching blades in 3 hours.
Yep.
And what size are those?
Those were 7 to 9 inches.
Okay, and those would be knives or daggers?
Knives. They were two knives.
All right. And then you do the sword at the end. How big was the sword?
So the overall length was about 32 inches.
Okay.
The blade itself was 26 to 28 inches, I believe, parameters were.
That's a baseball bat.
Yeah, it's a sword.
And how long did that take?
So that took me a total of 32 hours to complete.
32 hours.
Yeah, they give me 4 days.
No kidding. Yeah. So this is quite a production, this show.
Oh, yeah.
Holy smokes. Where was it at?
So I can't reveal where we went and filmed.
Okay.
But they came here for the finale. They were actually here filming at my shop.
Oh, no
kidding. That's how that works. The finale round, the Smiths go back to their home forge and make a weapon from history.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then they bring you back and then they test it.
Yeah, it's. I know the show is really successful. In fact, there was even a competing show, and I don't know the name, but Bill Goldberg was the host of it.
Oh, that's Knife or Death.
Knife or Death, yeah, okay. Yeah, see, they even have to get a little bit brutal with the title to get your attention.
Yeah.
Bringing Bill Goldberg and getting an aggressive name.
Yep.
Not like, you know, something classy, forged in fire. So who's the, is there a celebrity that they need for this, or who was the involvement with the forged in fire? Is there a Myron Mixon? Myron Mixon is like the big barbecue guy, so they bring in, you know, that.
I mean, they've got
judges and stuff.
They've
like
got
that.
A master bladesmith. That's Jay Nielsen. He was my judge on that episode. So him and Ben Abbott switch out.
Okay.
Episode to episode. And Ben Abbott's a 2-time Forge and Fire champion. Well, now he's a 8-time Forge and Fire champion.
Oh, wow.
Because they had a series of Beat Ben Abbott. They brought back guys to try to beat Ben Abbott.
So he's the Bobby Flay of the Forge.
That guy's, he's a wizard.
So they have their personalities and their experts.
And then they have Dave Baker, who is a weapons recreation specialist. So he knows all the history of these blades and whatnot. So he was actually in Hollywood. He used to make prop weapons. And so the finale weapons that they pull and reveal to us to build, he builds all of those in that shop to prove that they can be built in that time.
Do these just start out as just a rectangle of steel?
After I forge it. So they actually start out as a stack of 1/8-inch thick steel, 25 layers high is what I start with.
Okay.
And then I heat it up and forge weld it together.
Wow, so you're making layered cake.
Pretty much.
Yeah, layered cake. Pineapple upside down, layered cake.
7-layer dip of steel.
Right. That's the truth. It's the bean dip, you bet. Hey, let's take a brief pause and we come back. We're going to continue the conversation here with Cody Adolphson, the 2022 episode.
Season 9, episode 6.
Champion, Forged in Fire, History Channel's Forged in Fire. We're here at Little Wolf Ironworks, live in his studio here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how he brings this into the real world. Is he going to be selling some knives? Is he going to be doing some other things with the world of forging? What can you do in the world of forging these days? He's also a welder over at the Marathon Refinery. I want to talk about that too. Welcome back here live in the studio at the Little Wolf Ironworks Industrial Shop here in Bismarck, North Dakota. Jason Spies here with The Crude Life and SuperTalk 1270. Cody Adolphson is the champion of Season 9, Episode 6, the champion of the Forged in Fire on the History Channel. He made a sword for the championship round, a couple knives leading up to it. And when we teased at the break, we wanted to find out how he can apply this into the real world. He won some good prize money. He invested in the Blue Max 110, which I imagine some people know what that is. I don't.
It's Big Blue. It's the power hammer on the show, actually.
So. Big Blue. There Big you go. Blue. It's the Big Blue. Not to be confused with Big Boy. Just get in line. It moves fast. You ever go to Big Boy?
All the time.
Get the Hawaiian flying style. All right. That's what I call it. Okay, so you've got the Little Wolf Ironworks. What is it that you do with Little Wolf Ironworks? How can you apply this out into the real world?
So I I make custom knives. People order a knife. They kind of pick what kind of steel, whether Damascus, mono steel. They can pick handle material, and I make them a knife. And
okay.
I make them a handed down heirloom that they can hand down for generation to generation.
And this is a forever knife. I was explaining it to my son. I said, it's one of those knives that, you know, you give your grandchildren, and if they lose it 10,000 years from now, somebody finds it and it still works.
I'd hope so. That's my goal.
But it is like one of those forever knives.
It is. Yeah, that's my goal, where somebody buys a knife for me, they can hand it down generation, generation, and, you know, make it a special thing.
I can see a lot of, you know, family names and family crests and just, you know, some things that can be really put into there. I was noticing in your, was that a Snap-on Tools? What is that?
Just some type of a toolbox.
Toolbox. Antlers, so you could even do antlers.
Yeah, antler. Sort of I've made handles with meteorite, mammoth tusk.
Meteorite? Where'd you get that?
I know a guy.
Oh, okay. Well,
no, it's actually from the largest meteorite formation in the world. It's the Campo del Cielo meteorite in Argentina.
Okay. And I suppose you can just buy that offline or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
You just got to know who to talk to.
You just got to go to the right dark website. Holy smokes, I'm holding it here. I've wondered about that because a lot of iron, right?
Iron and nickel.
Iron and nickel and meteorites. Yeah, they say a lot of meteorites are high in iron and nickel. I couldn't remember nickel, but I remember the iron part of it. In fact, a lot of the ancients, that was sacred if you made a knife out of meteorite.
Yeah, you can forge it into a knife.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. So, okay. How about anything else? Are you going to do anything else with the Blue Max, or is it just for knives? Can you do...
You can do ornamental blacksmithing with it. I mean, okay. You can do quite a bit with them.
Do you see yourself being one of those artists that sell, you know, the twisted wrought iron and all that different stuff?
I had a lady ask me one time how much I'd charge per foot of ornamental blacksmith hand railing, and I threw her some outrageous number and she said, oh, that's not bad. And I just kind of stood back and was kind of like,
let me rework those numbers.
So I could ask for more.
But that shows you there's a market out there.
Oh, there, yeah. It's, okay. I mean, it's a trade. It's just like any other trade, and somebody has to do it.
And how much of this is like welding? Because you are a welder by trade, right?
Yep, by trade I'm a welder. I have my own welding truck.
Did you go to trade school for that, or just kind of learn on the fly?
No, my college is what you're standing in. This is where I learned how to weld too. My dad was a welder too, so I'm second generation welder.
All right, so then talk to me about that. You're over at the Marathon Refinery.
Yeah, I work for a contractor over at the refinery.
Okay.
So I started this when I was 18, jumped in a welding truck and went to work. So,
when did you start out in the oil field? Because you were out there for a while, weren't you?
I started here at the refinery with Westcon.
Okay.
Local company.
Oh, sure.
Started, yep. So I started with them. Dad worked for them for years. And then I kind of traveled around with them for a while, built the refinery in Dickinson, and worked up in Watford and here and there, you know. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of came back to the refinery every so often when there was a job here, and since I was local, they didn't have to pay me for travel pay.
Yeah, I suppose not.
Yeah, so.
Saves on the hotel, $300 a night.
Right, I just shacked up at Mom and Dad's here and went to work and cashed all the money.
Right, yeah. You can negotiate a good per diem that way.
Yeah, so I've done that for the last 11 years, and then knife making kind of got my eye, and one day I'd like to go full time. That's the goal.
Are you seeing more of the welding opportunities open? Because there's been a big push for people to get into welding in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was wondering. You know, you're wanting to go more towards the artistic, passionate, custom high-end rod, which I think is great.
Yeah.
But I'm also wondering on the welding side, is that really picking up or what?
Yeah, I mean, we're losing skilled trades like crazy.
There's something like an 85% retirement rate. I think that's over, actually. I think they're gone, actually.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, honestly, you work out there every day. You just see the work ethic. You see, you know, back when I first started, it's completely different from what it is now. You know, you're not getting the same quality of hands on your jobs. And, you know, people are just there for a paycheck. They don't do this there's no pride in it anymore.
The other part I wondered about is, you know, when I was... I'm in my mid-40s, and when I went into the workplace, they said that I will probably have 3 to 7 jobs throughout my career. But they said, throughout my career, meaning I'd probably work in the media as a writer or talk show or something within that vein, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nowadays, they tell people that you're going to have like 15 jobs. Every 2 years, expect a new job type of a thing. Are people leaving welding then when they go there? I mean, what's going on with that?
I have no idea. I mean, you're out in the oil field. Yeah, you're going to have 15 different jobs you end up on in a year, 2 years. You know how it is.
And that's, I mean, a lot of people try to stay in there if they can. But, of course, if it's down, they got to go do something else.
Yep. You know, this job ends, you go to the next one. This pipeline ends, you go to the next one. Yep. It's just
yours kind of seems a little bit like a lateral move, though. You know, I mean, welding and forging metal seems pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, I picked up welding really quick and easy when I was younger. I've been around it since, I think I welded the first time when I was 6 years old.
Oh, wow.
Like I said, my dad's been doing it since
Well, that was the other thing I was bringing up about the different trades and stuff, is that, you know, a lot of welders and pipe fitters and electricians, that's their job for life. And that's where I'm wondering if I don't think a lot of the younger people are looking at it like that, you know?
No. Honestly, like I said, it's scary. We're losing our skilled trades like crazy.
Right.
There's not going to be enough people to do what needs to be done.
They'll do it for 5 years, make good money, and then
do something else.
Go, I don't know, work at Walmart?
I mean, if I do go full-time, I'll still do welding on the side. I mean, I'll always have a welding business. It's
sure.
Something to do around here, and people are begging for it around here.
Second generation, you know a few people.
Well. Yeah, one or two.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about these knives then. If someone were to buy them, let's get some knives sold for you here, see if we can do that somehow. So how does somebody buy a knife? I mean, do they just call you up? Do they send you a sketch? Do they text you? What?
So I post all my knives that I build on social media, my Instagram or my Facebook. And usually the way it works is someone sees a knife that I finish and they say, oh, I love this, I would like something like this. Then I would say, well, this particular knife is going to cost X amount of dollars. And then sometimes that's too much for them. Sometimes they go with it. And then I offer to go to a mono steel compared to Damascus or whatever the knife I posted was. So get a hold of me on social media. My number is on my Facebook. You can text me, you can call me, we can get something set up, and I actually work through you, and you design your knife with me to make it yours.
Okay. So, at the 10th Annual Bach and Barbecue, you're going to be having a knife as part of the auction there. Walk us through that process. So, it's going to be like a meat cleaver, is that right?
Yeah, so I made it a nice, thin, like, meat slicer cleaver shape, and it's actually out of, I think that one's out of 40 layers of 1095 and pure nickel layered in between it.
Okay.
So I call that Darkmascus. So it's really,
oh,
there's a lot of darks and then just nice bright white lines running through it.
It's not the white mascus, the dark mascus.
The dark mascus. So yeah, it's a nice thin profile. I actually just heat treated the other night and got it in temper right now and just bringing that.
How long does a knife like that take?
So
from start to finish, I'm talking about draw it on the concept, on the artist's sketch pad with the pencil and the whole deal.
You're probably looking about 14 hours of work per knife.
Per knife, okay. So how much goes into, say, the sketching? About an hour or two?
Not even.
Oh, that's half hour, 15 minutes?
Yeah, 15 okay. minutes. I'll just kind of run with it, draw a couple straight lines and run some curves in there. And
you know what it reminds me of? Back when I used to play Dungeons & Dragons, back when I was a kid, in the Player's Handbook, they would have like hand-drawn weapons.
Oh.
That's what that reminds me of, with the shading and just kind of some of it, because they were hand-drawn. They weren't, digital by back then. Of course, the book was from, I think, the 70s or 80s or something like that. So you start with the hand-drawn
I get a shape, knife. Or if I'm forging, I'll kind of just work a shape into it, and just, it could be my own brainchild of, in the moment of forging.
Now, if a knife is, say, 9 inches versus 7 inches, is that a big difference in time?
A little bit, probably in the grinding stage.
Okay. I mean,
you need a little bit more steel, or if I'm forging out of Damascus or making it out of mono steel. So the price range goes up, obviously, smaller to bigger knives.
Sure.
But yeah, not much difference in time, really, depending. And then your construction of the knife could make difference in time. So you can have a hidden tang, a through tang, or a full tang, like the ones you see in front of you. This is considered a full tang knife.
Okay.
So, and a hidden tang would look more like this one in front of you, to where this is actually going to pass through the handle material.
What's the difference between the knives that have holes punched in the handle and ones that don't?
So, yeah, the ones with the holes punched in, that's for weight reduction and epoxy to go on each side of the scale.
Okay.
And that's a full tang. And then the one that doesn't, that's a hidden tang or a through tang. So I'll either glue it into the handle material, or I'll actually thread the back end and then put a pommel on it and actually have a mechanical connection that way.
So then when it goes into the oven here, the oven gets how hot again?
That gets about 3,000 degrees.
3,000 degrees. The steel, the metal gets nice and red hot, white hot.
Yep.
And then do you put it in the Blumax or the Cole Ironworks or the anvil with the old school hammer?
Yep.
Oh, all the above?
All the above.
Just the shape? Yep. Is there like one that does more of the flattening, one that does the fine tuning, one that does...
So the press more, it's not as shocking to the metal. It's a more controlled press.
Sure. Like compared to your hands and you squeeze the sandwich.
Okay, yeah, so right? Compared to the Big Blue where you're coming down and hammering it with 110 pounds of hammer.
Gallagher with the sledgehammer on the watermelon. Okay, all right.
So that could shock the steel, so where you could actually pop the steel open.
Okay.
So with the press, it's a lot more controlled, and I can just set the welds, and then I can go to the Big Blue and then draw out that billet. The Big Blue is more just, it's for speed. Helps me draw it out instead of sitting at the press and drawing it out each. So I can do it in less heats, takes less time compared to...
Is there anything else that you add to besides like a nickel that you ever...
You could clad just about anything onto a knife. I mean, not all of it's hardenable, so I could put it on the outside to where the high carbon steel, which is hardenable, ends up on your edge.
And it is a carbon steel?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I do mostly high carbon steels.
That's what I was curious about. Okay, I was going to ask if you add a carbon, but that's already in there.
Yep.
Okay.
So it's all high carbon steels, 1095, 15 and 20, 1084, 80 CRV2. I mean, there's a bunch of them.
Okay.
And they all take different processes of heat treating and tempering, and then that changes the hardness of the steel. But you could clad. I've cladded a guy's grandpa's hammer on the outside of a knife because his grandpa was a carpenter, so he wanted his grandpa's hammer on his knife.
Okay.
My buddy is cladded in Gal 19 machine gun barrel. And you could do just about anything. Meteorite, wrought iron from an old ship anchor chain.
Well, that sounds cool.
Yeah. That stuff's pretty cool.
Well, all right, that's about going to do it here, unless there's anything else you think that we left out of this interview. Is there, you want to give a plug for what you do at the Marathon Refinery? I mean, it's just welding, right?
Yeah, I'm a code welder, pipe welding. I have my own welding truck, rig truck, so.
Are you looking for other job, or they pretty much got you so busy there you can't take other work?
Oh, that's a full-time gig. Yep. So I'm worked for a contractor. I've worked for them for about 4 years now. So.
Okay. But you are looking for a little bit of knife sales.
Yeah, so the show obviously helped with that substantially.
But that's going to be something, you know, that you can always put on Forge all of your advertisements, all of your marketing, all of your articles as a line, you know, champion or paragraph, that kind of thing. So
but anyone wants to get a hold of me, social media, Instagram, Facebook, Little Wolf Ironworks, shoot me a message.
Well, thank you, sir. Oh, by the way, here's a gift for you. We have a official. Now, not too many people get these.
Oh, boy.
Very sought after in the open market here. You got to get these on the dark web, too.
Oh.
This is from, there you go. It's your own Crude Life.
Oh, there you go.
Nice, manly seafoam green.
Heck yeah.
That's right. I use. But those are Pelican. High end there. It's not quite the Yeti, which is the big sexy one.
No,
It's this similar.
They do the same thing.
They do the same exactly. So I got one myself. They're great.
Awesome.
In fact,
thank you.
We have people that come back and want them for their spouses too afterwards. But hey, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank
that.
You.
You bet.